And welcome to the Under the Bus podcast. I am Clayton, joined by Merge. How you doing, Merge?
Oh, hold on one second. I got something to play. Damn it, it didn't go.
Hold on.
Hold on.
One more time.
Yeah, it's a parade inside my city, Jaw. It really is. I'm doing great.
My word. You failed just like the Grizzlies, so it's okay.
I did.
Alan. Alan, how are you doing, bro?
I am I'm tired, but I'm good.
I'm good. It's what? It's midnight over there?
It is indeed.
So
it is indeed. I've just got home from the United match where we protested for 20 minutes outside the stadium because, you know, when we don't like our ownership, we make it known and we don't pretend to like them on Twitter. So there is that part. Blazers out. Etc. Love to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me on. Long time, you know, etc. Joke on Merge.
And we are joined once again by the great Raj. How are you doing, Raj?
I'm doing great, man. I was having fun watching Kings Warriors, rooting like hell for the Kings. I'm excited, man. Thank you for having me back on here.
You're on here quite often now. It's great. It's almost like we're buddies, you know, and Twitter doesn't realize that. Just going to put that out there.
I'm sorry. Sorry for that.
No, it's not you. It's not you. Anyways,
Raj's star has overtaken us all, guys.
Oh my gosh. I mean, Raj is great. He deserves it. So, all right.
All the flowers in the world.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Let's go ahead and get to it with we're gonna first do a Grizzly series review and then move on to a preview. We're starting just about 45 minutes after the Kings Warriors game. So want to do a bit of both. So yep. First things first, I want us to be able to laugh a little bit or a lot at Dylan Brooks, the schmuck who totally thought like he could poke a bear and ended up getting mauled. Just hysterical. He not only walked out of media talks once, but twice, but I think also as Merge is showing three times.
Every game after that, I poke bears comment that they lost. Yep. No comments to the media.
Yeah.
Can I just pull one out quickly for Dylan Brooks?
Was it there a video of him already in Cancun? Like it was 12 hours later. I don't know if that was actually him, but it was quite funny. You can't talk as much shit as Dylan Brooks did and play as poorly as he does, not just did, as he does, and still get butthurt about people acting like you're the villain. You've tried to bring on that persona. You gotta suck it up when you shit the bed as bad as he did. So does anyone want to add anything to that? He is just, I've never understood the love for Dylan Brooks from really anyone. So
the one thing I respect about Draymond Green is that he is a villain. And he plays up to it, and he does not give a shit what you think, right? Mm-hmm. He just does it. And that is why Draymond Green is in a different... And also because Draymond Green is an otherworldly defensive player, probably the best defensive player alongside AD of this generation, right?
Yeah.
Like, really phenomenal. It's like, so spectacular. Another reason why. But people respect Draymond because he is who he is, right? There is no fake. He might not like him, but he is that guy. Dylan Brooks, however, is the one who was saying all this crap, right? We all know LeBron James is old, right? But that old man still averaged 28, whatever he did. Raj will know the stats better than me, okay? he just will. So he went out, and I'm still in football mode, as you can tell. I'm still wearing my United shirt, so my stats aren't there as they usually are. But LeBron is phenomenal, right? You don't go out and... Especially a guy like LeBron James who feeds on stuff like that. You don't go out and call him old. He had his, and I think this is the absurd part, right? Did any of you three realize that LeBron had never had a 2020 game in his career?
That seems crazy, right? For Ryan LeBron, who is an actively a good rebounder, you know, mm-hmm. and has played 200 plus playoff games, whatever the number is, over 150 at least plus playoff games. You would think at some point in his playoff career, his NBA career, just in general, he would have had that, but no.
So Clay is walking back and forth like he's about to fight Dylan Brooks. It's just
I decided not to sit listening. My chair.
He's like not sitting down, but I was thinking about. So, Alan, you said that, you know, Draymond comparison, you know, that meme where it's like flirting versus harassment, right? It's kind of like the, it's kind of like the gap between Draymond Green, Marcus Smart, you know, even Patrick Beverly 6 years ago, like those guys to like Dylan Brooks, the gap is production, right? To be able to talk crap when you're down and then to still like go out there and still, you know, prove that, you know, you're the heart and soul of your team. But I think you just can't talk shit when guys don't guard you. Like, it's a very weird place to be in, right? Like, to talking crap while guys don't guard you and you're not providing anything on the other end, and then you're having like groin shots, getting flagrant fouls. It's just, it was an awful series for Dylan Brooks. But yeah, the gap between those, like, even Marcus Smart, right, will hijack offensive possessions for the Boston Celtics, but the level that he does it is to a point where like he still contributes in so other ways. Dylan Brooks just was awful in that series, and I think he played his last game for the Memphis Grizzlies. So,
oh my god, sad point. Woo! Did you see the GM? Anyhow. Did you see what? Oh my god, I've never seen that before in an exit interview where he just goes, "Can we talk about it later, please?"
Yeah,
That was bad. That's legit, like horrible, like optics for Dylan Brooks.
Brooks said that, or
no, the GM said that.
The GM, oh,
that's those horrible optics for Brooks as an unrestricted free agent entering free agency.
Man, he's gone. Oh, dude, I did not realize he was a free agent. That's why I was so like,
he cost himself so much money. Like, oh my god, yeah. He was on pace for like a $20 million a year type of contract. I'm not sure what he gets now, but yeah, he cost himself a ton, even with all the fines and stuff,
I've never been a Dylan Brooks guy. So like, I've never seen that level of like, oh yeah, definitely he's worth it. I've never seen that. Also, like, going back to, she's a Memphis Grizzlies fan, and she's a really good follow on Twitter. I can't remember, NBAK maybe or something like that. Anyway, she was just kind of going quickly over Brooks, and just saying like him and Taylor Jenkins, like, Jenkins is like a good coach, obviously, but sometimes he gets too relaxed. But then like, he also can be conservative in things, but like with Dylan Brooks, he never like would pull the plug on him, you know, like when another team's player would do something like that, you know, he'll yank him out. Well, no, he would just like, okay, go ahead and keep going. Like,
he is a Budenholzer disciple.
I mean, that's true. It is true, but it's just, I like, mean,
so
is, that's
so is Durbinham, but
yeah.
That's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk. We're going to talk about Ham. And one thing that gave me confidence in that he is slightly different to what Budenholzer is and what Taylor Jenkins is as a coach, what we've seen with Taylor Jenkins so far as a coach, because I think Taylor Jenkins is really, really good. But I think there's one big difference, and we'll talk about it, and it's game six that showed me that difference. Me and Merch talked about it on text and stuff, but we can get to it later so I don't, you know, ruin the order of things.
Word. All right, let's go ahead and move on. Anthony Davis was the super duper star of the series. never scoring more than like 31 in any game, but oh my god, they were talking about it on, I think it was Spectrum, because I had a hard time listening to Doris Burke make a, you know, apologetic statements for the Memphis Grizzlies. So rare that I would rather listen to Stu and
whoa,
I know
it got really weird towards the end because Doris is
Arango.
Yeah, I know it was definitely odd.
Mark Jones was great though. Shout out to Mark Jones.
Yeah, but it was interesting about how like in the first half, I think maybe even early into the third, AD only had like 11, 13 points.
Mm-hmm.
But he had already gotten a double-double. But it felt like the most dominant early, like, low-number double-double that you would ever see. He was everywhere on defense, blocking shots, getting boards. Like, just – it was just stupid of how good he was this series. I mean, I think he had – it was what? Close to – like, it was over – had to be over 30 blocks, it felt like, for the course of the series. It was
36 blocks. 26 plus 8 steals is what he had.
Yeah, just phenomenal. He was everywhere. I mean, even when he wouldn't get a steal, like, or block, he was still influencing shots so much. Or like he would get tips on balls and other guys would be able to get it. Like he would just grab boards from anyone. And I mean, that was partly because like Memphis has no one really to match up truly with him. Like Jaren Jackson III, I love him, or Junior, sorry. Like I love him, but like this just shows he's not on AD's level, whether it be offensively or defensively. It was just a masterclass of how great he was. I want to go with Alan first on here about your thoughts on AD, because you know we've talked about it before, but also like in the DMs and everything.
So, very, very quickly, I texted Merge during game 6. When I was watching it, sorry, because, oh my. Thursday were the, so full disclosure, Thursday was NFL draft. Mm-hmm. As all of you know, we love Seattle Seahawks. We had an amazing draft. Shout out to John Snyder and Pete Carroll.
You love them.
I fucking love them so much.
But, NBA is on. I'm sorry. NBA is on.
Listen, don't make your stance come after me. It's all I'm asking you right now.
Raj, yeah, you better be careful.
Be prepared for that shit in June and July. Just letting you know.
Summer league time? You're going to put me on
summer league? No.
That's training camp time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Raj is about to you know, use those stands as like attack dogs now. It's scary for guys.
Weaponize them.
Yeah, weaponize them.
He's got a little DM going on Twitter telling him attack Alan, attack play, attack Bird.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to AD. So I was watching it Saturday morning, so yesterday, and the thing that I kept on going, and I texted Merge this about 6 times whilst I was watching the game, was that was probably the most dominant defensive performance I've seen from one singular player in about 10 years of watching basketball. Like literally watching so many games. Obviously, I watched basketball before that, but like really, really watching basketball. It's like he sucked the life out of them whenever they were close. So like, I love Harry Potter, right? You know, so I don't know if anyone else loves Harry Potter here.
My girlfriend does.
I enjoy. Yes.
of course you do. So, Prisoner of Azkaban. Okay. Mm-hmm. What happens to Harry when the Dementors come onto the train? They suck his soul out of his body.
They suck his soul. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was definitely the entire series.
AD was a Dementor. That's such a great comparison.
He's also super long like a Dementor. He's everywhere. You can't avoid him. I think that was my brother said it, so shout out to my brother. He was the one who brought it up to me, and I thought that was such an apt comparison that I had to bring it up on the pod. I love Anthony Davis so much, man, and I'm so happy he is playing this well. And it's such a travesty that Rudy fucking Gobert has 4 Defensive Player of the Years, and God. Anthony Davis does not have one. That is AD, such a joke.
AD and Draymond Green have one combined in their whole career.
Fucking disgrace.
That's a regular, you know, season award. I don't think he's ever going to win it again with the games played. But no, Alan, you're right. He was the best player in that series. Like he was I know he had the up not and down close. Offense, 31 point games twice. The other two were from like 12 to 15 points, whatever. You talk about taking their soul out, and that's what he did defensively. He was everywhere. They had him on Xavier Tillman. Memphis runs a lot of ball screen action. It was just, they forced that Jaw Jaren or Jaw Tillman to be like a 2-on-2. And it was like AD guarding Jaw and making him take those floaters from like a step out further than he wanted to. And then he somehow, like pterodactyly, can go out and cover Luke Kennard and then make Desmond Bane shoot 45 footers. We're the only ones that he can get free on. And then just, and then
I'm
just,
sorry. He pulled up. He pulled up in game six from the logo. And you Clay, instantly knew it wasn't going to go in. I know it was all he could get. And it was hysterical because, of course, like, I mean, we like Desmond Bane, of course, as well. But like NBA Twitter just like loves Desmond Bane.
Talking about sucking the stall game sucked out. Jesus Christ.
Like, I thought you were going to pull a meme there for a second. But like, he just, man, he couldn't get going like hardly at all. It was great to see. Sorry, Raj. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Yeah, Desmond Bane. That's the only place he can get free from 40. And look, Desmond Bane, if he can stop saying like A every time he drives, like you're not getting fouled on every single drive.
Just saying and one every time he goes
through. Every single time. Yeah, but yeah, Desmond Bane also short arms, right? So harder to finish around the rim. He's more of a bulky dude.
He's a T-Rex. The most insane build on a player I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but like, so the Lakers, again, AD forces this into it. Lakers take away the three-point line, they take away the rim. Everything Memphis got was from long two range, and that's just you're not beating, you know, the Lakers that way. And then you saw in that game six was like the culmination of that. Jaw took like five threes in the first quarter, some crazy amount. Like that's the only offense they were getting, and yeah, he locked them down. Offensive rebounding as well. They made them, you know, send two on him on the boards. But he was the best player in that series, and that's a strange thing. Like that's probably the first series he's been better than LeBron in a playoff series here. Like it's maybe he was better in Houston against Houston, but
I think he was better in the Miami series.
Yeah,
Miami I think LeBron won it because Lebron.
He had that 47 point game to LeBron. Yeah. In that game,
I think games one and two, right?
Yeah,
right. I think games one and two, AD was dominant, and then I think LeBron had, you know, maybe a get a game four, but anyway, doesn't matter. I think he was just incredible tonight, mm-hmm. And yeah, next series he's gonna be a big part of it as well. But he was incredible against Memphis.
Merge, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a number here real fast just so I can. Okay, so I got two stats here. The first one is they put a graphic up during the game on game six. It was in the first quarter, so numbers aren't completely accurate to the rest of that game, which I'm assuming it was less because they all shot poorly. But this was when, with AD as the closest defender in the first five games, John Morant was 7-for-20 at 35%. Jaren Jackson Jr. was 6-for-19 at 32%. Yeah. Dylan Brooks was 3-for-14 at 21%. Desmond Bane was 2-for-13 at 15%. And here's my other stat. The Grizzlies shot 29% from 2-point range in game six.
Mm.
58 shots they got from 2-point range. They made 17 of them.
I think at the half, the Lakers had almost as many points in the paint as the Grizzlies had points, period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Grizzlies just couldn't do anything. Like, this is where, like, Jaren Jackson's flaws have always been. Like, he's a great player, don't get me wrong. Like, the way that we talked about him, especially on the last podcast, probably makes it seem like we don't like him. I love Jaren Jackson. Like,
we all love him.
He's in my opinion, he's an all NBA type defender, like really good player. You know, could be a guy, you know, 18 to 25 points a night, you know, anything like that. Against AD, he's overmatched, you know, like he can't bully AD down there. You know, like, he's long, but AD is just, you know, as we always say, a pterodactyl. So, like, it's just on offense he can't handle. On defense he can't handle him. Like, he's just straight overmatched. AD was amazing.
Can I make a point about Triple J?
Yeah.
Just because you bring up a good point. I feel like we all really, really like Triple J coming out of the draft as well. Mm-hmm. Like,
potentially. Number two on my board.
Ridiculous. But the thing is, right, NBA Twitter, here's looking at you, Chris Vernon and Michael Pena, overrated players so much that people start to think that there's something that they're not, right? And that's through no fault of the player, right? So I clearly want to say that when we talk about players like Triple J. I don't even hate Triple J as a human or anything like that. He seems like a really cool dude, really good mm-hmm. basketball player. Shout out to him, right? Like, really, you know, tough. He never gave up either. And him and Ja, I want to give them their flowers because, you know, mm-hmm. it could be really easy, especially game five, for them to go, you know what, we're 3-1 down. We're just going to mm-hmm. throw the towel in. No, they went and they busted their ass. So shout out to those guys, man. And they took the L, like, you know, they took the L really well. So
Josh spoke with the media.
Really, phenomenally. You know, I cannot fault them for that. But when you have these bozos on NBA Twitter boosting up these people to be something that they're not, and then calling the late, and we'll get to Michael Pena because I've got a special segment.
Oh, no. Let's go ahead and get into it. Michael Pena has always been a bitch. Just straight up. Michael Pena has always been a bitch.
Let me get the ether beat going real fast.
I remember.
When do I call someone a bozo on camera? I never do.
Like, Michael Pena back in the day said that the only chance the Lakers had to ever be good was if they had gotten DeMar DeRozan when he was a free agent back in the day. And I was like, no, pass. And he's like, beggars can't be choosers. Well, choose on that, bitch. Like, fuck you. Like, seriously, you have never been a good writer. You used to write for LA. Why? You're a Boston Celtics fan. And then continuing to shit on them. And all they do is make him.
I wonder why he's writing for The Ringer. Oh, yeah. I wonder why.
Like, God, Pena's always been a track take.
Can I just point this out? So I was listening to the Ringer NBA podcast when the Lakers trade was made. Because sometimes they have people on there who are really, really good. And because I think the Ringer on the whole is good. And I think Bill Simmons, when he's interviewing people, is phenomenal. So I do want to say that because I think as an interviewer, I think Bill Simmons is like by far one of the best like ever, like so good at it. Michael Pena was talking about the Lakers trading for trading Russell Westbrook for D'Angelo Malik Bando. He called it the worst trade of the deadline. I went back and listened to it just to make sure that I wasn't misremembering stuff. Okay, he said that we were a soft sandcastle, and he put it on Twitter as well. Apparently, the soft sandcastle stuff that
would be in the article. He put it in the article.
Article because he's a bozo. Yeah. But I cannot stand people because he's hated D'Angelo since he came out the draft.
Yes,
he has.
D'Lo shit on him.
I did not know about that.
Because Pena
shout out to D'Angelo.
I pulled the piece up, so I'm just gonna read this out because I haven't looked at this and I just wanted to look for myself. Mm-hmm. The Lakers shuffled stuff around and tricked some people into thinking they got better, while approximately 4,500 second round draft picks exchange hands. Wow, this is my first time seeing this. I didn't even read this yet. Wow.
Yeah. No. He's like I said. He's always been a bad reporter. He's been a fine reporter. When it comes time to him analyzing anything, like, dude can't do it. He's just completely inept, like just awful at it because he doesn't understand basketball. That's the thing. He doesn't understand, and he takes
everything personally. He took the fact personally that he said that D'Angelo was going to be bad. D'Angelo has proved him wrong. D'Angelo is a fucking good NBA player, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he cannot deal with that. The reason why Minnesota traded him wasn't anything to do with basketball. It's the fact that Rudy Gobert's ass could not get on with D'Angelo Russell, and D'Angelo Russell was calling him out on his BS. That's what happened. It is widely reported on, so you can go find it.
Easier to trade an expiring D'Angelo than it is a max contract, 3 or 4 years left.
He traded five first-round picks.
Walker Kessler and Jared Vanderbilt and Malik Beasley as well on top of it.
Shouts out to you, Tim Connelly and Dell Demps.
I just want to read one more paragraph from this because this is unbelievable. Hold on. Just because you've been – this is the context of talking about the trade, by the way. Just because you've been eating dirt for a couple of months doesn't mean you should throw a parade when leftover beef lo mein is suddenly for dinner every night. What? That's what you got from that move? That's you don't have to call the Lakers contenders. I think that was fair. Like, you know, I think that was a fair criticism. But
yeah, at the time, the Lakers were still what, 3-4 games under 500? Yeah,
they were the 13th.
Yeah, 13th. Like the Lakers didn't even get above 500, I think, until like March 23rd or 24th. It took them forever.
The
like
last 2 weeks. With,
yeah. So, I mean, like, if you want to say, like, I'm skeptical of the moves, that's fine. Like, I would have totally understood that. Did. Yeah. But then to like shit on it just as much as he did, just continues to show he is not good at his job. It's always been amazing to me that he ever like actually thinks he knows basketball.
He gets
just
paid
because,
for this, by the way.
Yeah,
he gets paid.
He gets paid handsomely.
I'm sorry. Another one more. One more. I'm sorry.
I love that. Rogers in on that too.
Winner, Milwaukee Bucks. Getting Jay Crowder for 5 second-round picks is solid for a team that's been all the way in for the past few years. Crowder played 2 minutes in that series. Or something like
he
that.
He had more DMPs in Milwaukee than he did, other than just obviously sitting at home in Phoenix, like than he has had in his entire career. That move did not work. That move was not good.
He didn't play in a series where Jimmy Butler, a guy who he should be tailor-made to defend, he didn't get a minute on him.
And a guy who's played with in college and in the NBA. So theoretically, he should know Jimmy Butler better than anyone in the NBA.
Yep. It's just hysterical how bad he is at his job. And people think he's good. Like, this isn't like Bill Simmons, who like has really good connections, who when he's not being biased has really good analysis. Like,
oh, Simmons is a smart ass dude.
Oh, like, yeah. He knows exactly what he's doing. And he admits like he's a Boston Celtics fan. Like,
that, I respect like, I respect the hell out of Bill Simmons.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like he's a fan like we are.
Yeah.
He's a fan like we are. He's a fan of the Celtics. He's going to hate the Lakers. I'm cool with it. I hate the Celtics. I don't hide it.
He's an incredible historian, too, of the league. Yeah. He might be one of the best. One of the best.
I used to have that basketball almanac book that he released.
Yeah, the book of basketball.
It's insane.
Yeah. Pena wants to be Bill Simmons. He wants to be KOC, and he's just not. He might as well just be a basic beat reporter for some trash team, man.
I'm also on this EFA tour. Can we also give a special shout out to Chris Vernon? Boy, he's trash.
I'll just say that he is just, again, another ringer guy.
It's and a front runner thing. Yeah, you can't say that you aren't a front runner when in the games 3 and 4 against the Lakers, he tweeted a handful of times. In game five, in that third quarter, when they were going on that run, he tweeted 10 times in a span of 30 minutes. I'm sorry, like that's
where was he in game six?
Energy.
Where was he in game six?
He was already talking about how he hopes the Lakers lose to the Kings or the
Warriors. Also, yeah, he said go Kings, so that's not a good call on your part, my guy.
Yeah, but it makes me sad that he does a podcast with Kevin O'Connor, because I love Kevin O'Connor to death, so I can't listen to Kevin O'Connor.
Kevin O'Connor, but he was the first one. He put the Lakers number six on his team rankings like a week after the Lakers did the trade.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers have the best record since the trade deadline.
So
you know who else called it immediately? But you know I can't believe he does, because you know he's usually just hot takey and horrible about everything. Stephen A. said immediately once the trade happened, he was like, the Lakers are going to be really, really good now.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he held to his guns when everyone was trying to tell him, are you sure? He was like, yep, the Lakers will be really, really good now. So shout out to – he doesn't get many things right nowadays, but when he does, I will give him his flowers, you know.
Right. But before we go, like, another 20 minutes on these people, let's move on to the next thing.
Let's go on to the next game.
Sorry, D-Lo, guys. I started.
You know, you're good.
It was really having Rod just reacting to the
article. I never even read this.
Well, because it's not worth a read.
I think because I read the headline, which is Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving changed teams – the Lakers made a million meaningless moves, and I must have just not read anything after that.
That's Shout out though to the Lakers of trading a abuser and what was it, 3 second-round picks for Rui Hachimura.
Yes.
So like shout out to that. And just some other little things that they did. But anyways, D'Lo had a pretty dang good series, especially that game six. I know everyone was worried about it in the first, I think it was the first game or it was a playing game where he just wasn't great. And of course, like we're all kind of nervous, but I mean, game six, he nailed that down. There was two trips down that he just made back-to-back threes. Just fantastic. The trash talk to Dylan Brooks after one of them too was just phenomenal. Was just phenomenal. Raj, what did you think of D'Lo and how he played during the series?
So to me, I think if D'Lo plays well, we don't lose. Like he's in that territory for me. I think I know what I'm getting pretty much from everyone else. LeBron obviously has his up and downs. AD can fluctuate offensively, but I think D'Angelo Russell being a guy you have to like spend resources on, that's really tough. Like you have Austin Reeves putting pressure on you, AD and LeBron obviously attacking the paint. But I think like there's ways. I think a lot of this series, so he dropped 31, didn't have more than 20 in any other game. Obviously had the awful game too. But I thought a lot of this series, he was like trying to bait for fouls. Like he was trying to get calls a lot. And I thought in game six, he was just like, I'm getting to my spot. Ja, you're 6'1", Tyus Jones, you're 6'2". Like, you cannot bother me, and I'm getting to that, you know, mid-range area, and he cooked them. And it's really tough to, like, again, to step up on him when you have so many other guys you have to worry about. And then from there, that's when the threes go, right? 5 for 9 from three. But I think he needs a higher floor, especially in the Warriors series. Like, it can't be this barrage of points and then do nothing for a bunch of the game, right? So, like, in every other game, it was, like, a 2 to 3 minute stretch where it was big time. Like, it helped the team, but, like, it's like 10 points in 2 minutes, and then he's just non-existent for the rest of the game. And I think there needs to be a higher floor there. And he's too skilled not to. He can get to a spot. The Warriors, again, are going to put their worst defender, quote-unquote, whoever that is, on the Warriors, on D'Angelo, and he needs to be able to attack that, put pressure on the rim. He can get to the line. He has a floater game. He doesn't need to settle for threes. He takes a lot of, like, second like choice threes where his main objective is to pass, and then he's like, oh, the pass wasn't there, let me fling up this three. And he has like the ability to be aggressive where that's a, you know, first option for him to shoot first, attack a closeout. All that stuff is going to be there for him. But 31 points in a closeout game six, that's why you trade for D'Angelo Russell. So but I expect more from him. Like I think he can be better than, you know, 11 points on 4 for 11, or, you know, 5 for 14 against 17. Like he's too skilled playing off two dudes who get so much attention. There's no reason, you know, he should even be taking like contested shots where there's two people on him. Like there's enough, you know, room for him to work around.
Definitely. I agree. I think one of the great things, especially of that game six, of how much chemistry AD and D'Lo had on the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of something like going back to when he was drafted, of just like, I this is why I just loved the idea of like a lob threat of like Nerlens Noel for so long. I know anyone that goes back to the old podcast, how much I loved the idea of pairing those two. And obviously AD is Nerlens on super steroids, but like, it was nice to see that for sure. That
Nerlens Noel, sorry to interrupt, but it just popped into my head. Nerlens Noel is Captain America before he takes a super serum soldier.
I was I almost shouted that out to you, but I was wondering if you would get it. So it was
the Marvel movie.
I figured you would, but I mean it just I didn't know. So anyways, going back to that, it's also nice to see like the chemistry that like LeBron has with him, you know, not even necessarily like just their play on the court, but like just kind of like the influence D'Lo has on him, you know, of that.
I mean, they,
know,
they
like,
started
LeBron,
the whole
LeBron the is doing the ice of it. Yeah.
Yeah,
LeBron's doing the ice in the veins thing because of him, you know, like he didn't do that before. Like
whole
and maybe
team is. The whole team
every three is ice in the veins.
It's just like, you know, like I think one concern that I could have really seen before is, you know, before games started and everything of eight, you know, maybe D'Lo has been kind of brash with people or like just didn't quite get along with people. I mean, that's part of the reason why he got dealt from Minnesota. I mean, I would totally get it. Like, According to reports, the nickname for Rudy Gobert in Minnesota is bitch. You know, like, that's just a matter of fact. It sounds like that's what was reported after they lost. But you know, chemistry between them, you know, they're all in it with each other. Like, that's something, the chemistry of the team is something that we've been missing in LA since the bubble. Yes. Like, so that's one thing. Like, I've always been a fan of D'Lo, you know, but I think that's one of the things that I've been happiest about is seeing that. So, Merge, I know obviously you're also a huge fan. So how about you give us some thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think the main thing to point out with D'Lo, I think the one thing that always kind of that was always a bright spot, even when he was struggling, was that there are like four or five specific moments that you can pinpoint from D'Lo in that series where he had like 8 straight points, and it's the reason why the Lakers ended up only being like down by like 3 in like game 1, or he made 3 straight threes, obviously, in game 5 that put him up by 1. Making 4 threes in the third quarter is huge. Like, he had those moments in, I think, every win, essentially. Almost every win, D'Lo had a moment in the game where he did 8 straight. Or he made, like, 2 or 3 pull-up jumpers. Or he had some really good pick-and-roll chemistry with Anthony Davis. Which is why I stayed positive about him. And then he eventually had that offensive explosion. And it's why, when we go into the Warriors series, I think him getting going early is up there with some of the most important points that the Lakers have to go with to beat the Warriors. Is whenever D'Lo plays well, the Lakers play well. Like you said, Raj, when he plays well, the team wins, it seems. He's one of those guys where when he's hot and he's really going, he brings the whole team with him, because he's so unselfish when it comes to passing the ball as well. You know, there are a couple times where I thought he went for the home run, pull up 3-pointer and transition a lot.
Yeah.
To kind of put the Lakers up by like 15. And then that led to a 3 on the other side. And then the Lakers were only up by 9 at one point. And he did that a little bit too much. LeBron did that a little bit too much too with the 3-pointer as well. So I would want D'Lo to kind of hold that back a little bit. Like, unless he's like really feeling it, like when he makes like 3 straight threes and then like he's in transition again, then sure, by all means, do a heat check if you're that hot. But it just seemed like the game was in the balance, and it was either going to be, we're going to win by 20 handedly, or it's going to be a dogfight to the end. And they shot some of those threes sometimes, especially D'Lo, where it kind of pushed the game back over to the side of the Grizzlies in terms of momentum. But overall, especially I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know it felt like he didn't turn the ball over that much in the series as well. I'm not sure what his assist ratio was. But that's huge, protecting the ball as much as he has. You would expect a player like him to turn the ball over a lot more, but he seems to have really worked on that in terms of bad passes. Sometimes he makes a fancy pass and it bounces off, you know, defender's hand and it goes out of bounds. But for the most part, in just turning the ball over, he was really good at not doing it as much as you would think a player like him would do. So I think Lakers in general, or the backcourt in general, him and Austin both did a really good job at taking care of the ball and not allowing the Grizzlies, who are a great transition team, to get some easy buckets in transition. So, but overall, I thought D'Lo was put a huge part in all four of the wins. Hopefully he continues doing that in the next series.
Can I just make one point before we move on about from D'Lo to something else? Mm-hmm. D'Lo takes it personally whenever he plays the Warriors because of his small stint there. He always plays well against them, regardless of what team he has played for since, whether it's Minnesota or LA. He hasn't had a bad game against the Warriors. Unfortunately, he turned his ankle in one of the games, which led to that prolonged, correct me, Raj, I think it was like 2 weeks. Yeah, he was out. But he started off that game well, and then he got hurt, which sucks. I think that's a big part, because I know they have Gary Payton, but Gary Payton hasn't looked all the way right. Since he's been back
or whatever,
in the state. So I'm not particularly worried. If Gary Payton was healthy, I think he could do a really good job on him. So please don't people think that I'm dogging on Gary Payton. Like, I think he's dope. I think he's really, really good. But I think he's not been right ever since he's been back in Golden State. And I think that I think you're right. I think they'll put Steph on him. I think having Steph on D'Lo is a big advantage for the Lakers. I really, really like. I know Steph will work hard. I'm not saying he won't. I'm not saying Steph's a scrub. But it's the fact that, you know, play will probably be guarding Reeves. I think that's a huge advantage for the Lakers.
Yeah, last thing on D'Lo. He had a bunch of assists in this series. And I think a couple of the games, they were really good. But sometimes he passes up looks where I'm like, the shot is yours there, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes, like, the kick out to Vando isn't the correct play. The correct play is, like, you shooting that mid-range play. But he has passes that only he can make. LeBron can make them too, but at least, like, the pick-and-roll partner with AD. Like, he'll have lobs off the dribble to AD. Mm-hmm. Like, that's only passes he can make. No other guard on the team can make that. So, Clay, you talked about the relationship with AD. I think that's super important in a Warriors series, right? With the way they play the pick and roll, where Draymond kind of roams Looney at the rim. Like, D'Lo being able to waver between a threat as a scorer and a passer in the pick and roll with AD, like, that's so huge this series. Or hitting that skip pass to Austin or whatever. But I think he's going to be on the ball. I think we've seen a transformation from LeBron into, like, off-ball LeBron more, cutter, spot-ups, off-screens, you know, screener, etc. That means D'Lo and Austin. That's a lot of pressure on them to make the correct reads. And I think D'Lo's the better guy at it right now, still, as, like, just experience in the league and, you know, with the little playoff experience that he's had. So, yeah, his passing reads and his scoring reads, it's going to be so vital in the next series with LeBron, I think, not wanting to, you know, we saw it against Dylan Brooks a little bit, but not wanting to, like, attack Andrew Wiggins, who I think they'll have on him, like, one-on-one every single time. That's just very draining on him. So we'll see. But yeah, they're gonna throw Steph on him. Alan, I hope you're correct. I think Steph's gonna fight over. They don't like to switch a lot, so Lakers are gonna run screens. Mm-hmm. If you watch the Warriors, they hate switching Steph onto, like, any compromise, you know, position, and hopefully the Lakers can kind of take advantage of that. But yeah, D'Lo better be ready. It's gonna be a dog fight of a series, and a huge one for him.
Definitely agree. Let's go ahead and move on to Austin. Austin had a fantastic series overall. Just what was it? Game three, where he led scorers. Game four. Thank you. Austin Reeves. Like, he's just, it's just so funny to see, like, guys just kind of be continuously surprised by things that he is able to do. I mean, like, he essentially trapped Dylan Brooks on that fast break where he got the layup, and then doing kind of doing the little, you know, you can't see it on
Euro step, yeah,
audio. yeah and kind of just making fun of him, you know. It's just fantastic. Yeah. He is you know, the gritty athlete. You know, all the white athletes,
the stereotype,
yeah. But then he is also going to shit talk, and it is just, I love Austin. Raj, what stood out to you about Austin this series? Okay, it was kind of a true, like, we had a coming out party for him this year, but, like, this playoff series really seemed to be that as well.
Yeah, it's not normal. I mean, like, I said this somewhere else, but, like, go listen to, like, if you watch the Cavs-Knicks series, right? And then go listen to, like, those Cavs players talk. Jared Allen's like, the playoffs lights were too bright for me. You know what I mean? Like, that's normal progression for a player. Like, you go through a playoff series. It took Keegan Murray, like, 3 to 4 games before he can get used to playoff level intensity, speed, shot selection. Austin Reeves, game one.
Hooked
Jaren Jackson Jr.'s drop coverage. Game two, they counter, showing high on the screen. Racks up assists to, you know, to help. Game three gets more assists. Like, it's just weird to watch a guy who's already so comfortable. And you don't usually see LeBron just give up the keys, but he kind of did. It's weird to say, but, like, I think national media will start figuring out as well. This is an offense run by, like, remember early in the year, Darvin Ham's like, we'll get into Ham later, I'm sure, but, like, Darvin Ham's like, I'm going to build the offense around Anthony Davis. It's kind of what that looks like. A bunch of guards who can be aggressive and attack. And Austin, we're giving to him at the end of games and be like, hey, go ahead. You decide. We'll set you a screen, maybe two, and you decide where the ball goes. And that's just nuts. That's absurd. That's it's just not normal in the NBA for a kid in this first playoffs. But he has playoff level shots in his toolbox, and that's why he can do this. The mid-range pull-up, he's already one of the best in the league, in my opinion, at that mid-range with contact. He's not getting the call anymore. because of whatever reasons, but like he doesn't get that, you know, mid-range pull-up call anymore, but he's making the shot.
People bitched about it, Raj.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and you know, even when he gets to the lane, he's still like drawing fouls. He put, you know, their team in foul trouble a lot. He's just tough to defend, and he's like a psychopath. I mean, just the I'm him he's stuff. A
crazy person.
Absolutely not.
You have to behind the back pass up by two in the clutch of a playoff series. I can't tell you how many times
I've watched that pass, man. I cannot tell you how many times. And each time I'm just like, the balls on him is just amazing.
You guys remember the first play of the playoffs? This is the first possession, Lakers ball. I think we got the tip. First play. Austin Reaves drives at Dylan Brooks, makes the shot, and then flexes on him. This is play one of the playoffs. Nothing's happened yet. Round one, set one. I was like, oh shit! Like he's here, and then he went on to cook them. So yeah, mentality and psychopath Austin.
I think that really needs to be his new his new nickname, since he doesn't really like the AR-15 anymore, understandably so. I think we just need to start calling him the psychopath.
Very much. So, yes.
It's just, Merch, Alan, you guys want to add anything? I know we've talked
just very quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your country ruins all the cool nicknames, right? In Europe, AR-15 would be a great nickname because, you know, we only see AR-15 in Call of Duty. You know, saying.
Okay. Well, I'll just say, we talked about D-Lo's chemistry with LeBron. It's same thing with Austin. Austin and LeBron are like best friends. Like they're always messing around on the court. We talked about the whole, you know, after Austin made that Euro step. But like there was was it game one or it might have been after game four where he essentially told LeBron it was like how much fun he was having, essentially. It's just they're a perfect basketball pairing. We saw it with Alex Caruso. The basketball IQ is just off the charts between those two. And you know, LeBron and Alex had the same thing, and same with him and Austin. I guess he just likes scrappy white boys. Matthew Dellavedova, that was another one. He was on there. But yeah, it's. I think the chemistry just in general is just great, but especially with LeBron and our starting backcourt, it's really like out there, and you can really see it on a game to game basis, even after, you know, press conferences and all that.
And just very quickly on Austin and Bron, I know Bron has that thing on Twitter where there's that thread of him lying. My personal favorite is the Marcus Rashford one, But I think he was being very genuine, because we saw the leaks at the time when everyone in the Lakers companies or Austin Reaves play, they were like, oh, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
I don't think he was lying when he was talking about that. I think it was really, I think with guys like Austin, you can tell straight away that they're just absolute ballers. Like, serious. He's so good. I know he's not a real undrafted guy because he would have gone in the second round. But players at that talent level should be going at least in the late lottery. And I know no one drafted him, so the whole league's at fault. But the fact that one team didn't take a chance on a guy like that is insane to me. Like, at least at bottom end of the first round.
I agree. All right. I already mentioned this guy that was traded for an abuser and three second round picks, Rui Hachimura. I don't remember I couldn't remember if it was the end of game four, the graphic where Rui had more points than the entire Memphis Grizzlies bench did for the series. It was just fantastic. He is built, his game is built for the playoffs. He has all three levels, like, and again, chemistry. He looks good with all the guys. He's defending his ass off. It is very clear that Phil Handy is working with him, you know. Just being able to knock down shots from insane passes from the psychopath now. and LeBron just hitting him, and then Rui's all under there by himself, just hammering at home, and then obviously a timeout immediately after. It's just, and again, another kind of, you know, coming out party for Rui Hachimura. He was fantastic. And this is kind of what we were all hoping for when he was traded. Obviously, he's gone above and beyond that. but my point still stands. So Raj, I especially want to hear you on, honestly, obviously, all these guys, since like you're our guest as usual, but still, Rui, what stood out to you about him?
So, you know, we called Austin a psychopath. Rui a little bit too. He was like smiling after every basket, which is just insane, you know, in a playoff series. Obviously, the Desmond Bane comments are like the background of that. But Rui was, I didn't expect this at all. I think the offense, I'm sure you guys watched him maybe more in Washington than I did, but like I feel like his offensive game is more just like sculpting that down to like to fit a winning environment. To me, his defense is what's been the thing that's really opened up. Our game six adjustment, Alan, you were giving Darvin Ham some credit for game six. I'm not sure if this was part of your text chain with Merge, but we put Rui on Desmond Bane, right? Like that was kind of the adjustment that we did. And he was able to like stay with him, not get beat off the dribble and not get bodied. Mm-hmm. He blocked him one time at the rim. Like his defensive jump to me is what's been huge. He's been a rim protector for us. We're playing those LeBron Rui small ball lineups, which haven't been great, but he's like physical enough to deal with Jaren Jackson. And then like he's kind of our release valve. If you watch the Warriors, they'll give like Andrew Wiggins post-ups and like it'll be extremely fruitful for them. Same thing with Rui. We're just like, we have nothing. Here you go. Post up, fadeaway jump shot. And he's really like, he's worked on learning that he's 250 and a super athletic freak and that like no one can take him. And sometimes he'll just keep like Santi Aldama will be on him and he'll like back down and there's just no resistance. So he'll just back him all the way to the rim. And then he had like the James Worthy dunk in game six as well. He's been so fun. And I'm surprised. I don't know where you guys had him when the lot. I know you guys are more draft people than I am, but like, I'm guessing this is what people saw when he went this high. He's been cool to watch, man. And another Phil Handy project gone right.
Yeah, I had him a little bit more in the lottery than eight or nine or wherever he went. That was more just based on he was pretty raw, but he obviously saw the skill set, and he's more athletic. Like he tests more athletic than he showed on courts. I kind of feel almost like Phil Handy again, yet another thing of he's made it like his athleticism pop more. You know, like, cause he didn't really look like this in Washington. He didn't look like this in Gonzaga. Like he just, he was, he could jump high. He could run fast. You know, he could move quickly, you know, as well, not so agility wise, but like, he didn't look like this. And as he said, being able to defend Desmond Bane, you know, off the dribble, like part of it is Rui's length, right? He's got a 7'2", 7'3" wingspan compared to Desmond Bane, who might be a negative wingspan, like, and honestly, he reminds Desmond Bane's like body comp reminds me of it was a guy a couple years ago that the Lakers had
6'6" with a 6'4" wingspan.
Yeah. Oh God, he's minus two. It was the guy was from the G League. Pretty dang good defender. We traded him, I think, as part of. Like
Mario Jones.
Thank you. Where Jones had a quote unquote long wingspan, you know, but it wasn't that he had long arms, it was just that he had a broad chest, you know, like broad shoulders. Like Desmond Bane has broad shoulders, but like these tiny little T-Rex arms, you know, as we said, you know, like it's very evident, especially when you're going against Rui, who, you know, is 6'8", 6'9", with a 7'2", 7'3" wingspan and a standing reach of what Desmond Bane only could ever dream of, you know, like it's just, that length obviously impacts him, but also on top of that, being able to keep up with him and body him, but not foul him is something that he wouldn't have been able to do, I think, before. Like you get it for a play or two, you know, but not as consistently as it has been with LA. So it's just another a thing of like, let's get a fail, not quite failed. I won't go that of a
misused
guy. Yes, a misused lottery guy who's been a bit of a disappointment. Now going to LA, and it's like, holy crap, our developmental staff is just really, really good. And this is something that I wish like the Lakers had back with, you know, Luke Walton back in the day instead of his beer pong buddies. So,
looks like after an off season with Phil Handy and Chris Jenn and Tyler Rowe and all these guys, because I think I know people like, oh, trade Mo. I wouldn't trade Mo until we see what we have with Mo.
Yeah,
if after like maybe 6-7 weeks,
if the deal is too good, then I think you do it. You know, if the deal is just way too good, then yeah, you do that. But like if it's just a marginal, I'm not doing that. You know, I understand of wanting to, you know, get something, and like I always say, like you don't need to pay bigs, but unless they're obviously elite. But you know, I think that with more development and also just being able to play more, he only played in the regular season with the Lakers what, 7 games, something like that. That's not enough.
Half of those were probably garbage minutes as well, too.
Yeah, and some of them were when he had returned from injury when no one really thought he was going to be back.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think he returned quicker than he probably should have from that high ankle sprain.
Yes.
But yeah, like just a complete shout out to the coaching staff. And I think, you know, we can talk about Darvin Ham here. The adjustment that he made that I was really impressed with was, I thought he was going to be tied to the hip with a 9-man rotation where he played either Troy Brown Jr. or Malik Beasley or both of them with the 7 guys who should play every game, which is a starting 5, Dennis and Rui, right? Because he forced a lot of Malik and Troy Brown minutes to the point where we would go on a run. He would bring in Troy Brown and Malik. I'd text Merge going, we are about to start essentially hemorrhaging points. And what would happen every single time those two guys would come on, we'd start hemorrhaging points. Like it got to the point, it was bad.
Malik Beasley was a negative 16.4 net rating. Troy Brown Jr. was a negative 10.2 net rating.
And it felt like it.
66 minutes for Malik and about a little under 100 for Troy.
Like we talked about it before the series started where we said that like Troy's an elite regular season essentially is what he is. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? But at this point, I would trust Lonnie Walker more than both of those guys, or at least throw Lonnie out there to see what he looks like in a playoff environment over those two guys. Like,
it's probably too late for Lonnie. I think probably we're you know, too deep into it, but I think the issue with them is playing them together. I think, and then also in our worst defensive lineup, right? So you have Malik, Troy, Dennis, LeBron, and Rui. So that's our lineup with the least amount of rim protection. And then Taylor Jenkins was doing something smart. He plays their best guys during that stretch. Jaren Jackson Jr. is on the floor. John Morant's still on the floor. Yeah, Desmond Bane's on the floor because they're playing a ton of minutes. And so I think that's why their net rating is a little bit – obviously it did look bad, but I think that's part of their net rating looking so shrewd is that, like, those guys are out there while being our worst defensive unit. Mm-hmm. And to me, Malik Beasley is just unplayable. Troy, I think a little bit defensively, you can play him. I think
you can play him against some of those guards on Golden State.
He also doesn't force shots, right? Like he's not going to force sub 8 3-point attempts a game. Like he's just not going to do that. He helps you on the boards as well. He'll box out. Malik Beasley, if he's not shooting well, he's giving you nothing. Like he gives you absolutely nothing.
Listen to this. In 41 minutes, LeBron and Malik were on the court together, they were a negative 33.7 net rating.
Oh my god!
That's a guy who, where when LeBron was hurt, everyone was saying, "Hey, let's wait until LeBron comes back to really judge Malik. LeBron's gonna be force feeding Malik really good looks and all that." It hasn't happened in the playoffs. So, you know, it might be because of the lineup that they put out there. With it's normally like Dennis, LeBron, Troy, Malik and Rui, where, and I think Rui's numbers on the whole series itself got kind of skewed because of that unit. Honestly, I think they had one really good unit, a really good stretch, and like I think the game 3, and it kind of balanced it out. But yeah, it never worked. And that lamb never worked except for that one game. And hopefully Ham has learned that if you're going to play Troy or Malik, it has to be one of them. And it needs to be like with LeBron and AD out there, I feel.
And also, I just roll 8 deep at this point. We're in the playoffs, man.
I agree.
Roll 8 deep. Play Wenyan, because Wenyan, you know what? I love Wenyan Gabriel, man. He's always ready. He comes in. He works his ass off. He makes the other big work for everything. Like, I know Triple J scored a couple of times on him, but Wenyan made it as difficult as he possibly could on him. And right, and Jerry Jackson's a better basketball player than Wenyan. We are under no illusions there, right? But the fact that he makes him work, and it's not just an easy, like, oh yeah, LeBron's not trying, let me just score every single time, right? Mm-hmm. I think as long as we have Wenyan, I think Wenyan can play against Golden State as well. I think their bigs, essentially just Looney, I think he matches up really well with Looney. I know Looney's a bit stronger, but I think how active Wenyan is, I think he'll be fine in this series.
Yeah.
You got a point, Raj?
No, I agree with that. I think Wenyan should play. I think also agree. I don't think we're going to 8-man rotation. I don't know what LeBron's injury, you know, is. I don't know how AD feels, but I think he'll still be around 9 to start this series. But I think Beasley and Troy should be one or the other. I'm fine if it's neither, but it should not be both. To me, I think we've passed the point. Darvin is trying to find the Beasley game, right? He's like, there's going to be a game where Beasley wins us a game in the playoffs. I just think you're hemorrhaging the other games where that's not it. And maybe you get one Beasley game, like the Pelicans game is the really only other one, right? And like the Pelicans game at home. But other than that,
there's that one against the
Timberwolves.
No. It was a game at home where he had 8 threes. Was it the war? It might have been the Warriors.
I think he had it against the Timberwolves, man.
Timberwolves or Pelicans or Warriors.
In Los Angeles against the Timberwolves, we lost that game. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But anyway, like I think we're just, you know, we're hemorrhaging minutes where he's on the floor because he gets hunted to oblivion. Him on Jordan Poole, on Steph Curry, on Klay Thompson is a tire.
Like Gary Payton's the only one you can really put him up against.
Even then, I don't like it. Payton puts a lot of pressure on the offensive rebounding. He's a really good cutter where you can't just be, you know, spaced out on defense. And the Warriors motion offense. I mean, there's no rest. You have to be locked and loaded every single second. And Beasley just doesn't have that 100%. In him. He's an 82 game player, which again, like Alan, you said, that's fine. That's okay. It's just, he's not a playoff dude.
No, I think
with Troy Brown as well.
Yeah,
I think Beasley in 82 games will win you 5, maybe 6 games, and that's fine, right? But the problem is, I think you don't have enough elite defensive players on this team whereby you can hide Malik Beasley in a series waiting for him to have this game. And I think that's the crux of it, right? I think this roster construction wise is probably like another offseason ish away from being like its optimal stage. I think we're almost there. Don't get me wrong. I think this roster is really damn good. But I think we're still like an offseason away, a couple of moves more away from being like really tweaked to that point. I don't mind having Malik on the team. But I just think that at this point, roster isn't set up for him to play big minutes in the playoffs.
I think if Malik was on the 2020 championship team, I think you can play him there because you have like an Alex Caruso. You can put him next a KCP, Kyle Kuzma, even like people like that who could play defense on the wing that you could hide him against. Outside of like Reeves, who is solid but not, you know, Caruso. D'Angelo has his moments, but he seems to be better as an off-ball guy anyway. Chasing guys around. And Dennis is at the point of attack, he's very aggressive, but again, he's not KCP, he's not Alex Caruso, just because he's not the size of those guys. So it's just hard to play Malik alongside those guys, just in general. So,
all right. When I stepped out for a second, did we talk Vando or Dennis?
No, we stayed on what we were talking about before,
Ruby, right,
while you were gone.
And then moved on to Malik all of a sudden. All right. Let's go ahead and then talk Vando and Dennis really quick before we talk Ham. And, you know, we'll save Ham for the preview series. Vando and Dennis, Vando doesn't get as many minutes as I think a lot of people probably anticipated, probably just because like he isn't really an offensive threat at this point. He had a few threes, especially that game six. He had a couple where it was nice to see.
Again, I better than Malik.
Yep. Again, I would I can't wait to see how he does with the offseason with Gents and Phil Handy. But this will be a good series for him just defensively wise. I can't wait to hear who you guys think he will defend against the Warriors. Other than that, I mean, I don't have a ton to go off of. With
he's very active, blocks and steals wise. I think he was second on the team in blocks.
Yeah, I mean, like, really nice one. Yeah, he was really good. You know, just like it wasn't
super, no standout moments.
Yeah, standout moments. Yeah. Dennis, you guys kind of mentioned where he's good at the point of attack and whatnot. Don't felt like he lost us any games that I remember. During that series, Raj, you could correct me if I'm wrong on that. But I thought he was pretty solid.
Yeah. Well, with Dennis especially, I think he's part of this that I worried about with him, where like I'm not calling him an 82 game player, but I think like offensively he just can't get his game off like in the regular season. He took two shots in like game four, and then he took like four shots in game six. Like it's just in the playoffs, like small guards who can't shoot and who aren't like as like skilled, it's very tough to get your offensive game off. But he's a defensive player in the playoffs to me. Like he won us a lot of offensive games, but to me, he's just a deep. And then in this series, it's going to be so vital. We're going to have him on Jordan Poole, on Steph Curry for pretty much the whole time. And even if he's not scoring, that's a huge kind of ask on him. And then Vanderbilt to me, you know, I haven't seen this comp very many places, but to me, he's our Caruso in a weird way. Like he's the guy we deploy on the point of attack guard. Like if you see his relationship, we think of pairing relationships and offense, but like defensively, his relationship with Anthony Davis in terms of their coverages, very Caruso-like. Vando's very good at chasing over the top, you know, getting steals from behind, blocking shots from behind, you know, baiting guys into AD, very in ways Caruso was. So, yeah, they're going to be vital. I don't think Vando shooting threes is good process. I don't think that's sustainable. I don't think that's a good way to work your offense, but he's hitting – like he hit more threes than Malik Beasley, I think, did in that series, which is very dumb.
Yeah, get three in game six.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but I like the little dribble handoffs and stuff that he works in, and then he attacks the offensive rebounds. So he's gonna be a big part. But I thought they had a fine series. They defended Ja exactly to the way you wanted to. Ja had 45 one game, but a lot of that was on jump shots, so you live with all of those. I thought they had a good series. I don't think they're going to be offensively helpful very much going forward, but defensively, they're a huge part of the team.
Definitely.
So the thing with Vando is, I don't think he's like this incredible shooter, right? But I think he's also serviceable if you leave him bare ass open, especially at this point in his career. And they were leaving him bare ass open. And if they're leaving him open to the point where he's that open, I don't mind him taking the shot purely because of the fact of it, especially in this Golden State series where I think AD will be so dominant on the boards. As long as he's hitting the rim, which he is when he misses, AD will be there 9 times out of 10 to gobble up that rebound. Or if AD isn't and they put two guys on AD to box him out, essentially putting Looney and Green to try and stop AD to getting a rebound, that means one person will be wide open to get a rebound. Right, I don't want Vando to stop shooting. I know what you're saying, Raj. I agree with you. Like in an ideal world, you do not want Jared Vanderbilt shooting like 5 or 6 threes a game. But if they leave him bare ass open like that, I want him to shoot that shot. Only purely from the fact that if he makes 2 or 3, then they have to sort of hesitate and think about, well, he's made 3. Like I need to like at least semi close him out. So then that leaves less, leaves more space in the paint for guys like AD and Bron. So I completely get what you're saying, and I agree with you, but I think for his development and I think for the sake of the Lakers, he needs to shoot those shots when he's bare ass open.
Yeah, no, I agree with that to an extent. I just think like, so Memphis never really changed their coverage, right? So they had Jaren Jackson Jr. On Vanderbilt And so that means he was, you know, his job was to roam. But I think there are negatives to that. I think, like, if you put Jackson on Vanderbilt, that meant, like, their best guard, their screen defender was, like, Tillman, right? So when you have Austin Reeves being able to punish Tillman instead of Jackson because AD is the one coming to set the screen. So there's some chess matches there. I agree, though, for his development, definitely. Like, if he's, like, I don't mind it in the first quarter. Like, you know, let him take a few open threes. Why not? See if you can penetrate kind of the defense a little bit, you know, stand the integrity of your offense. But I think, like, I'd rather have him pitch to, like, very Draymond-esque, right? Little dribble handoff to D'Lo, to Austin Reeves, to even LeBron. Get them wide open looks where you don't really have to work that hard on offense to get. I think that's the good process there. But, yeah, he's, you know, he has like, set shot, wide open. Yeah, I think he can hit those at a respectable rate. I don't think Golden State's going to change their defense, though. Like, Draymond's not going to close out on that. You know, like, you're not going to get to attack a closeout off of that. But what you are going to do is him get to attack the offensive rebound, right? Like, it's very tough to, like, not guard someone, and then once the shot goes up, have to, like, find where they are, box them out, and that's why he gets so many tip-outs and stuff like that. But, yeah, I agree with that. I'm fine with him taking some first quarter jump shots, for sure.